This meeting of the Finance and Governance Committee begins now.
Good morning, everyone. It is Tuesday, July 15th. This is the Finance and Governance Committee, our very last Finance and Governance Committee. For those of you who are watching at home, we are changing our committee structure starting next week. So you should look online for our new committee structure and what that looks like. But today is our very last Finance and Governance Committee. I'm Amanda Sawyer. I have the honor of chairing this committee and representing the residents of District 5. We've got a couple of very important things going on today. So let's go ahead and get started. And we are going to do a round of introductions first. And there's a council president is locked out, so we're going to do this really slowly. So there we go. All right, I'm going to start to my left.
Good afternoon, or good morning, Amanda Sandoval, Northwest Denver District 1.
It is afternoon somewhere. I'm Paul Cashman. I represent District 6 on Denver City Council.
Good morning, Serena Gonzalez Gutierrez, one of your council members at large.
I'm Sarah Parody. I am your other council member at large.
Good morning, Darrell Watson, Fine, District 9.
Reverend Flynn, Southwest Denver is District 2.
Good morning, Diana Romero Campbell, Southeast Denver, District 4.
All right. Thanks, guys, for being here. So today we have an action item and a briefing. So we are going to start with 25-1014, instant runoff voting in municipal elections. Why don't you guys take it away?
You first.
Ms. Talks.
All right, fine. So you guys have heard from me on this in the last committee. I was missing my partner, so I'm glad that he's here today. We're going to try to be pretty focused today. We're not going to go through everything we've already talked about. So by way of introduction, I wanted to take a little bit of a step back and just talk about where this idea came from. It actually comes from like a fairly deep vein of mathematical theory and research. And in particular, Kenneth Arrow, he's a Nobel Prize winning economist. I really loved him when I was an undergrad. And he did a lot of stuff that I could never really understand or explain, but a lot of research, mathematical research, that showed that while no voting system is perfect, systems like ranked choice voting, or we're calling it instant runoff voting in Denver to highlight how it's a change for us, and similar kinds of systems come pretty close to fairness if you measure them by majority support and voter satisfaction. So if those are your lodestars, and there's always going to be a values choice when you're designing election systems, if those are your lodestars, then we have math on our side. So in some of the benefits of that, if you want to describe them more sort of, what's the word? In values terms, more normatively, is that you end up with a winner of elections who has broader support. You get rid of the spoiler effect. You get a better reflection of voter intent, because even if your preferred candidate is out of the race, your voice still gets counted. And it sort of connects into theories like social choice theory, which have to do with how you aggregate individual preferences into a collective decision. One of the ways that that plays out in elections that I think is incredibly important is that it means that candidates have a real incentive to reach as many voters as possible, candidates and campaigns. And so literature shows us that, in fact, in ranked choice elections, campaigns, voters get touched many more times because candidates are not leaving anyone on the table. And so they're, instead of just going for their, you know, most fervent supporters, they're trying to get across the board support. And not to steal Councilman Watson's thunder, because I know this is one of his favorite features of the system, but it also means that people are, instead of trying to just draw a sharp distinction between themselves and someone else in the race and make that as extreme as possible, they're instead incentivized to really point out why you should vote for me. And so elections are framed in positive terms, not in the sense of being sunshiny necessarily, although we do see some sunshine, like our bicycling New York City mayoral candidates recently, but in terms of being framed in terms of what you're for, not what you're against. So I just circulated a literature review that the American Bar Association conducted, where they went through all available literature and studies and concluded that the literature largely supports that RCV delivers on the things that proponents say it delivers on. And so again, you might not agree that those that those outcomes are desirable. But if they are desirable outcomes, the evidence is there in favor of ranked choice. And just to read the conclusion of this literature roundup, which is from this year, and again is from an ABA committee, the Task Force on American Democracy, they say that it does increase voter turnout. It does so among both low and high socioeconomic status voters. There's evidence it decreases negative campaigning. It can lead to the election of candidates with a broader base of support. And I just scrolled away from what I was reading, as one does. Sorry.
All right, and I'm gonna have to ask you to get going. There's 12 slides here. We've got a briefing after this, so we
yes,
need to be
we
done
don't have a whole lot
the
to
presentation
say.
In 10 minutes.
Yeah, and really, what we're this really is the presentation. The slides are pretty minimal.
Okay, great.
So I just want to go through those because I think this is important. It is increased associated with increased direct campaign contacts. And it does not appear to confuse voters. And we have a slide on how it played out in New York City. The final thing that I want to say by way of introduction, though, is that I actually think this is a good case for let the people decide. We have good news about risk-limiting audits, which we'll get to. We have good news about public education campaign, which we'll get to. But this is right for the people of Denver to decide. Many big cities have been using it very successfully with great outcomes. Denverites actually voted in favor of the state-level ranked choice reform, even though it didn't pass at the state level. And I think this is the kind of thing that we should decide through Democratic participation.
And Councilmember Parody, I just want to quickly add, and yes, we have 12 slides. We're going to get through them in 10 minutes.
Yeah.
We'll make it through. I have to elevate. There's a lot of quantitative rationale for why ranked choice voting instant runoff works. I think the qualitative piece we can't overlook. We are in a process, if you look federally, you look statewide, you look within even some of the municipal races, the level of rancor that is occurring within these elections, I think it's important for us to highlight if there is an opportunity. And we have demonstrated value that there is an opportunity for folks who are running for office. If you want to get elected in a ranked choice process, you need to relate to, speak to, listen to, and elevate the thoughts and ideas of folks beyond your core voters. I have strongly supported that for this reason, because I believe there is an opportunity for a smarter, better democracy. I think RCV, or instant choice, provides that. And I'm honored to co-sponsor this with Councilmember Parody, and we can roll through.
I think I have essentially talked about everything on slides 1 through 4, which were my first slides, so.
So I'll jump in. How many candidates? Provide some facts on slide 5. Up to 6 candidates can be ranked 1 through 6. Many municipalities have different listings. Based on our engagement with the clerk's office, we felt this was a sweet spot. We look forward to receiving your feedback on this as council members as we go through this process. No candidate would be left off the ballot, and there is no limit on how many candidates can run for elected office. Lots of education will be around this as this moves forward, but we thought 6 was a sweet spot. And we have a list of peer cities that are doing this. This is not new, and it is not unique. Very quickly of what happens after Election Day, all first-choice voters are counted and reported. In non-competitive races, the winner may be presumed on election night, although certification is a necessary step before a formal victory. This is part of where it's a little different for voters. It's going to take a minute longer for elections to be called. We know it works. We've seen it across the country, and we'll provide education specifically on that.
So regarding the two pieces of news that we have, one is that really good news. When we last came into committee, the Secretary of State's office had not yet issued their rule, essentially giving their sign off to the auditability of single winner races. And Councilmember Sawyer was very keyed into this, and rightfully so. We understood that that rule was coming sort of any moment, but it hadn't yet. Now it has. So they've issued their rule. We're able to reflect that in the new draft that we filed. And then we've come to a consensus among the sponsors and the clerk's office about how to handle the at-large races, which are currently multi-winner races. Of course, we know that that could change. We're considering that right now as well. But if those remain multi-winner, we have a provision in our draft that essentially says at the point in time when those races become auditable, when the software improves to that degree and the clerk certifies it, that those would go over to ranked choice as well. And so hopefully that would be the case before 2027. If not, we would essentially have voters ranking two people In that election, and six, and up to six in all the other elections. So it's not deeply inconsistent. I think there's a good chance that the software is essentially a matter of computing power. And so hopefully it would also get there by 27. If not, we would leave that one the same until the auditability was there.
And I'll be clear. I mean, I know folks are going to be asking, there are two bills that you all have reviewed. You have a large bill in this. There is no conflict in the outcomes of either one as far as the risk-limiting audits. The Denver Clerk's Office has been working collaboratively on all of the above, and we can provide more details as necessary as these both move through the floor.
And on the other update is about the education campaign. We've one of our new endorsers, which is Claro, we just got their endorsement, their strong endorsement today, but conditioned on a strong bilingual voter education campaign. And so we've talked to the clerk's office about actually in the charter amendment, noting that the clerk and recorder will be able to use the savings from runoff elections to fund that voter education campaign. If our city attorneys tell us that we can't do it in the charter amendment, we have that very strong commitment from the clerk's office that they use that funding, which would be a very well-funded campaign. Sorry, that was the other update about Perfect. The piece on that slide.
And I think you're up.
Oh, okay, good. So New York City, a very real-life experiment in ranked choice just happened, and this was an interesting election. First of all, it was absolutely record voter turnout, a 25% increase in new early voters. Overall, the highest primary turnout since 1989, 9% higher than 2021. And of course, we never know. There's always a lot of causation for these kinds of things, but it's certainly not depressing turnout. The person who came out of the first round with the lead remained in the lead throughout all of the rounds and got past the 50% mark after three rounds of counting. But that doesn't mean that the ranked choice format didn't have an impact, because number one, voters have verified that they report that they had a more positive experience with campaigns, that they thought that the campaigns were, in fact, more positive. And you saw candidates actually cross-nominating each other, campaigning together, exactly the kind of benefits we talk about. We also saw that voters felt more comfortable voting for someone that they might have been concerned was unelectable, which that happens to a lot of us, where we think, oh, I want to vote for this person, but nobody else does. And you try to be strategic with your vote. Ranked choice takes that away. You can vote for the person in first place that you want the most, because you know that if that person drops out, then your second place vote for the more quote-unquote electable person will then be counted. And so you're not harming either you're not harming your preferred candidate or your second preferred candidate by how you rank them. And so if everyone, just to put it in New York City terms, if everyone was concerned about defeating Andrew Cuomo and they didn't have ranked choice voting, the initial set of votes might have looked very different and might have gone to candidates with far more political experience that people did not actually prefer. And so instead, we have a someone who won the mayoral primary who clearly is the actual preference of New York City voters, but would otherwise have been subject to that kind of electability concern because he's young, he's a Muslim, et cetera. So exit polls found that 96% of voters said it was easy. 76% of voters in New York want to keep it. I won't talk about the other peer cities because we talked about them last time. This is our coalition. Is this your slide or my slide?
You know, I can take it.
Do it.
There is a broad coalition, and this coalition has been growing not just this year, but it's been growing for several years. These are all folks that we know and we trust when it comes to election reform. So Common Cause Colorado, Colorado Black Women for Political Action. I won't go through the full list. We believe that there is a strong group of folks that are supporting this. And if this gets to the ballot, we'll have strong support across the city. Very quickly, with a timeline for instant runoffs with ranked choice voting, you can all read the list. And I think we're on time for each of the dates. We are looking at July 15th today at FinGov, July 21st, proposed first reading at City Council. August 4th, proposed first reading. That's a typo.
Second reading.
And then November 4th, the people will be able to decide. It's our hope that we move this through FinGov to the floor so we can have a robust debate. And it's the hope that we are successful in putting this on a ballot so the people can make their decision.
And the last thing I'll say about that is we don't have elections that often in Denver, and this is the last chance that the people of Denver have to choose this voting method for the 2027 election. 2026 is not a long enough timeline to do the necessary voter education.
Great. Can you just go back before we've got a couple of council members in the queue. We've got public comment, but I want to make sure that we are not sharing incorrect information. So can you go back to the timeline really quickly? Because if first reading is July 21st, second reading would be July 28th.
Yeah.
And so I want to make sure that we are sharing correct information with the community.
I think that we had not intended to skip mayor council, so I think that should be July 28th and August 4th.
July 28th.
I know our calendar has been a little bit cursed.
And August 4th. Okay, so proposed first reading would be July 28th. Proposed second reading would be August 4th.
I think that's right. Is that, Daryl, is that?
That is our understanding, but what we'll do, we'll provide an update. The dates because of,
yeah.
One second, the dates because of next week's events, our dates are in flux a little bit. So what we will do, we'll clarify, we'll provide clarity on what's the timeline, but as proposed, we are looking at second reading on the 4th. That's the thought.
Okay, so first reading would have to be the 28th. Unless you asked us all to vote to delay it or...
That is the expectation, but folks, stay tuned. Lots of information, and we have a good coalition. I will be getting information out. Council President will be able to maybe provide a little bit more details because she is working diligently on all of the requests. But so we'll come back before this close out, we'll hit our calendar people up and make sure we state at the end of the public hearing what the dates
are.
That
would be great. Why don't we go to public comment? I just want to make sure, because there is a lot going on, and that slide is wrong. How it is wrong depends on what the answers are from a lot of
people to make that decision.
Amazing employees on the back end who need to fix it, but I want to be very clear. We cannot share incorrect information on something like this with the public, and that slide is wrong. So everyone, please disregard slide 11. We will figure out exactly what is the correct timeline and provide that.
I think it's the 28th and the 4th.
Great, okay, just confirm it, and then we can make that clear to the public at the end of public comment. So why don't we go to public comment next? We have 15 minutes set aside for public comment. There are 2 minutes per speaker. This is different from a public hearing on the floor where we get 3 minutes per speaker. So lots of times we get people who think they have 3 minutes, but they actually only have 2 minutes and they run out of time. It happens all the time, but just so you all know, 2 minutes, if you can please just come up to the microphone here and introduce yourself first and then go ahead. We unfortunately there will not be a timer that you can see because that would make too much sense. So we're gonna have a it's gonna be on my cell phone. And I will wave at you when you have 30 seconds left just to kind of give you just to let you know what's going on. So our first speaker is gonna be Justin Wills.
Good morning. My name is Justin Wills, political and legislative advocate with the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. We'd like to submit a position of neutral today. You may or may not know that we were largely opposed to the combination of ranked choice and jungle primaries this past November. But while that was true at the state level, we're taking a neutral position here for Denver's measure. I do want to note, though, that we do have a few concerns that we did want to highlight. Number one is the voter confusion piece of the measure, the outcome. We already see a stark drop-off in Denver and the metro area among voter participation in Black and Latino voters, and typically that's a voter education and engagement issue. So, Councilwoman, while I understand that, you know, you're earmarking money for voter education, we're already at a deficit, so I'm not sure that introducing a new system of voting, especially in a year where we are going to face deficits across the board, will deliver the desired result. It would take even more money to reach and teach all the folks that you're intending to. And number two, additionally, I'm not sure this solves the issue that we're trying to solve. You know, we appreciate the notion of having a more representative government, but we do have 9 of the 13 members are women. 6 of the 13 are racial minority. So we already have a generally liberal council. So it does seem that we have a council body that is representative of the city's makeup. It may be a case of if it's not broke, don't fix it. So, I think if you're trying to solve the problem of increasing voter turnout, voter engagement from candidates, we believe that this could probably be accomplished by moving the election to November. That would solve a lot of the issues that we're talking about today. Thank you, and open for questions.
Great, thank you. Next up is Jill Perry. And it turns out we do have a clock on the screen this week. We did not last week, but now you can count down on the screen. Take it away.
Hi, my name is Jill Perry, she, her. I just came today. This is my very first council meeting. This is a very important issue to me, mostly based on reworking the bipartisan by the polarization that this country is going through. And
if you don't mind pulling the mic down just to talk just up so we can hear you. Yeah, you're perfect.
Thank you. So I didn't really have anything prepared to say today. I just wanted to say that I showed up. So thank you very much.
Great, thank you. Next up, we have Katie Lunsford. Katie? No? Okay. Next up, we have Allie Belknap. Great, go ahead.
Thank you. My name is Allie Belknap. I'm the executive director of Colorado Common Cause, here today to urge council to refer this to the voters in partnership with Mi Familia Vota, New Era Colorado, the League of Women Voters of Denver, the Colorado Latino Leadership Advocacy and Research Organization, Colorado Black Women for Political Action, Ranked Choice Voting for Colorado, the Colorado Cross Disability Coalition, Working Families Party, and Fair Vote. This measure will create better access to participation for our Denver voters by eliminating the need for expensive, low turnout runoff elections. These elections represent a major barrier for many of our voters, and the proof is in the turnout results. In major cities comparable to Denver's population and demographic makeup, RCV has significantly increased voter turnout. And in Denver, it would ensure that not just the core voters turning out in our runoff elections decide what happens. Eliminating the runoff is expected to save the city up to $2 million per cycle and to increase voter participation by consolidating those elections. Voter education is a really crucial component to successfully implementing this, and we are in the best position possible to do this right. We already invest over $500,000 in voter education, and I've seen firsthand the robust and culturally responsive outreach and programming that Denver Elections does in neighborhoods across our city. We have grassroots groups like all of ours already at the table who engage voters year-round. And these are the groups who are committed to staying engaged, consulting on ballot design, voter instructions, pushing for robust investment in voter education, and conducting our own outreach work. Candidates themselves become fantastic educators, breaking down this method to voters and reaching out to everybody, not just their biggest supporters. I'll wrap up by saying that Portland invested just over $600,000 in voter education, that expanded their turnout from 50% to 66%, with 91% of voters reporting that they understand the vote method and prefer it. With $2 million in cost savings, we can really do this right. Representation is really strong in Denver, but we know overlaying demographic data with who casts votes shows us that higher income, educated, whiter, older voters are far overrepresented in who turns out. And
that's your time.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thomas Weiler. Thomas? Any Thomas online? Nope. Okay, great. So that is our list of people who signed up to speak. Oftentimes, we know our signing up to speak is confusing. So is there anyone else in the room that would like to? Yep. Great. Why don't you go ahead and get started? Just come on up to the mic right here. You would like to speak as well? Great. So we've got three more people.
Good morning. My name is Linda Templin. I'm the executive director at RCV for Colorado. Speaking in support of this measure, we know that RCV is proven in cities like New York City, San Francisco, Minneapolis, and Boulder. Voters say it's easy to use. 96% in New York City said this was easy. That was their second time using it. Boulder was 86%, said it's easy to just say who you love, who you like, who you can live with. The courts say it is one person, one vote. Everybody's vote counts equally. So this is something that's been proven up for over 100 years. The clerks say that Colorado can do the tally and audit on the same timeline that they currently run elections. RCV for the multi-winner seat yields proportional representation, and it is used in other cities to remedy complaints under the Voting Rights Act. So this builds fairness into the system. And as I mentioned, the audits are ready to go. The state software can run a conventional audit for the multi-winner seats, and it can run an RLA for the single-winner seats. So that is in compliance with the state rules, which are beyond what the city has. So I urge you to let the people decide. This has strong support. People are showing up in the middle of a workday to say that they want this thing. We cannot keep doing the same thing and expecting different results. So I urge you to let this advance. Thank you.
Great, thank you very much. Go ahead, and then we'll go to you. I can't see you there. We'll go to you next.
Great. Good morning, everybody. My name is Landon Mascareñas, and I'm the executive director of a new organization called Courageous Colorado. I want to say thank you to our sponsors here for this incredible measure, Parity and Watson, and all the other support on council. I got radicalized on this issue watching the mayor's race as a citizen, because I watched how the competitiveness and vitriol in that race was tearing our city apart, and I watched it tear apart friend groups. And I completely have seen from the research and from examples from around the country how ranked choice voting has transformed the way people actually build coalitions and build connection and build alignment in elections versus divisiveness. And just like you see in our coalition, ranked choice voting brings communities together. And that's fundamentally why we're here in support of it today. We, as you heard, Claudio said just this morning, they support ranked choice voting with that strong bilingual voter education performant. They said they're welcome to quote us. We're going to get lots of support from them. Mi Familia Vota also said, yes, we know that this is going to be an important shift for our Latino community, but implementing ranked choice voting will be beneficial to Latinos here in Denver. Ultimately, we see this happening in cities all over the country, San Francisco, Boston, D.C., Minneapolis, Boulder, Fort Collins is going to be doing it this fall. This is not an avant-garde random thing. This is actually being used all over the country to build a better politics, and national voters got to see that everywhere from New York City. My board chair, Amber McReynolds, who many of you know is a national and global elections expert, strongly supports this measure as well. Ultimately, we believe this decision is in the hands of the people of Denver, who supported a different but similar measure in this past fall. We know that if we can actually bring a measure like this to voters, the community conversation will be incredible and invaluable to help us think about what it means to build a stronger and more vibrant democracy for all of Denver and for the rest of Colorado as well. So thank you all for your leadership, and we look forward to seeing what comes next.
Great, thank you. And then our last speaker, if you could just come and introduce yourself too, please. Pull the microphone down. There you go. Yep.
Hi, my name is Celeste Landry. Thank you for letting us speak. I am speaking as an individual. I've been studying better voting methods for going on about a decade or so, and I'm a very strong supporter of better voting methods. I would like to point out that Colorado statute allows two kinds of ranked voting. One is the single winner instant runoff voting kind that we're proposing here, and then the other one is the one that could possibly be used for the two-winner at-large council election. It's a proportional ranked voting method called single transferable vote. It is the gold standard when it comes to electing members of a body, so a council. Doesn't work for mayor, doesn't work for auditor, but it's the gold standard for electing members of a body. And when people were talking about Portland, Oregon, Portland, for their city council, used the proportional gold standard multi-winner version. So I just want people to know that that option's out there and keep it in mind. I would like you to look into it. Thank you.
Great. Thank you very much. That is it for speakers. Let me just check the room one more time. Okay, great. Then let's go to questions. Before we go to questions, Councilmember Watson, do you have a final clarity for us on the timeline?
I want to,
so that we can make sure we clear that up.
Thank committee chair and the graciousness of our fellow council members. We spoke with council president as well as our calendar update person. And so July 28th is first reading, August 4th, second reading. It's confirmed, it's on the calendar, and we'll update all communications to make sure the public has the right information.
Great, thank you. Let's go to council member questions, and we are going to start with council member Flynn.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Many of you know that I started studying ranked choice voting. I think it was 2018 when I first became aware that the Fair Vote lobby, the RCV lobby nationally, had targeted Denver as its next, to put it on its list, to convert our voting system. Denver had a ranked voting system from 1913 to 1935. And this is the front page of the Rocky Mountain News from the 23 election. And it shows the vote results that they indeed ranked, but they only ranked up to three. But the difference in the system that Denver had, which was called Buckland voting, in that ranking, they counted everyone's second and third choice. And that gets to my biggest problem with this version, that it disenfranchises people who fail to select a continuing candidate. When we had 17 candidates for mayor, and I'm interested in your reaction to this, 17 candidates for mayor, when I was knocking doors, people were telling me, I have no idea who to vote for. How can I evaluate 17 people? I'm going to wait for the runoff and just make a decision then. If I voted for Debbie Ortega or Leslie Harrod or Ian Tafoya, I would have been out. My vote would not have counted in a ranked choice election, because the first and second place in the first round were Mike Johnston and Kelly Bruff. My ballot would be thrown out, figuratively, not, I'm speaking figuratively. So I'm no longer in the denominator. The exhaustion, they call that exhaustion. The exhaustion rate in the 57 RCV elections I've examined in peer cities from San Francisco to New York, the exhaustion rate has ranked as high as 54% in one race. 54% of all the ballots were thrown out. So does your draft still strike and repeal the requirement that city officials must be elected by a majority?
Council President, Council Parody, have you started, and I'll speak to the question you pointed at towards me.
Yeah, so I have a number of answers to that. I mean, the nature of ranked choice voting is such that it's not a first past the post election, which is the point.
Right.
But when you talk about that voter confusion and people sitting it out until the runoff, that is actually what ranked choice transforms. Because when people know that this is their one chance to go in and vote, they tune in, they sort through the candidates, the campaigns know that they can't wait for the runoff, and so they put it all on the table. And that is why you get more people looking more closely at more candidates, which is a positive outcome. Your other point was about disenfranchisement, and I think that's a really dangerous argument. A lot of the law review articles that I've reviewed that you've circulated, I served on a law review during law school. A lot of them have a political bent. A lot of those authors are affiliated with like the American Enterprise Institute, and those kinds of forces, which are also behind a lot of big money in politics, have put out this idea of ballot exhaustion and this idea that there's a certain purity to having a two-person contest, partly in order to get rid of ranked choice, because quite frankly, the interests that they represent use runoffs to dump money and turn outcomes. And I'm saying that because it's a fact, not because I'm trying to disparage anyone's feelings about this, but that is where that line of scholarship comes from, is from AEI. And it goes to show the benefit of ranked choice, which is that the idea that someone's disenfranchised because they didn't rank all of the candidates is the same as the idea that someone's disenfranchised if they don't show up for the runoff. And in fact, if you vote for, Debbie or someone else who didn't make it into the runoff, at least your second choice gets counted, right? Whereas if one of the two final runoff candidates wasn't your second, third, fourth, fifth, or sixth choice, you're just out of the running after the first round. So I think all of the conclusions that you're putting forth about sort of the value of the runoff system, I would actually really push back and say that those same values are going to do better in an IRP election. And when you talk about the denominator and exhausted ballots, keep in mind that that's no different than people not showing up to vote either in the first round or in the runoff. Okay. Not doing rankings is the same as not showing up.
Councilmember Flynn.
That's it. I'm done.
Please,
I'm done.
Yeah, no. I understand that you are passionate about this and you have a lot of questions. If we need to push our briefing to give us more time to get through all of this, we will. But please,
one last
make sure that you are being respectful and allowing other council members to finish their sentences.
Okay. Yep. Just one last point. The literature, that was an ad hominem, by the way.
To say
that the authors were biased. The authors of the others on the other side are also biased. My point is the literature is ambivalent. I can produce just as much that says the current system we have, as one of the speakers mentioned, produced a council just as diverse as that in Minneapolis or St. Paul that was in your presentation. But my point about exhaustion, you say it's as though they didn't show up if they didn't vote, but they did vote. That's the problem I have. But in all of our, in all of our runoffs, a majority of Denver runoffs have increased turnout. A lot of people like to say no one votes in a runoff. They do. And in five of the six mayoral elections that had runoffs with candidates of color, the runoffs had higher turnout, and the candidate of color won in five of those six. And that would not have happened in ranked choice.
And I'll be very quick, committee chair. And I want to say, Councilmember Flynn, one thing I respect about the thoroughness of your debates is that you do research information. I strongly support ranked choice voting. I believe it's important for the voters to make a decision. I don't see that there is any empirical data that demonstrates academics on either side of ranked choice or runoffs are right, wrong, bad, evil, anything. I think it's a matter of whether you believe the form of election or electoral process works or not. I believe that in ranked choice voting, it provides the opportunity for folks who are in or considering candidates to understand the 17 folks running for mayor to make a decision. I don't see those initial votes as a throwaway. There is not a demonstration from folks who've participated in ranked choice voting from any research that was done, surveys that were done, or saying, I felt my vote was thrown away. They feel and involved in this process. So what I am asking of folks is that this isn't a partisan process. Support for or against ranked choice voting is a matter of the system that you want to choose. I think we have data that demonstrates ranked choice voting works. We have data that shows that runoff system works, but the people of Denver haven't decided on that. And I'm asking this council to allow us the opportunity to debate this within the city for folks to make that decision. And I'm seeing a head nod by committee chair. I'll stop there, but I at least want to say I respect your opinion, sir.
Councilmember Flynn, do you have any follow-up? Or
I just want to mention that Portland...
Let me just say, looks like we've got five other members in the queue. So what we can do here is we can push our briefing. Councilwoman Gonzalez-Gutierrez is going to be the new chair of our new committee that's going to be looking at that, or we can wait a couple of weeks and go to the chair that I'll be the committee that I'll be chairing. We can talk about that later, but this is really important, and so I want to make sure that we're giving the time to it that it deserves. So Councilmember Flynn, if you have a response to that or if you have an additional question.
Just one response.
Yeah.
The Portland rollout in November was a disaster. Turnout in communities of color and low-income communities plummeted. 20% citywide didn't even fill out a ballot. They turned in empty ballots. Turnout was higher in 2021 in the last Portland election for mayor than in this one by a significant margin. And the literature that I sent out, some of it shows that RCV advantages wealthier and whiter communities and disadvantages communities of color and lower income communities. So the one thing I didn't see in the presentation was a problem statement. What are you trying to solve other than change for change's sake? So that's my last statement.
Great, thank you. Would you like to respond to that before
no,
we?
Because
actually,
we have
on
folks
my
on
list
queue.
Of questions, what yeah. questions was what problem are we trying to solve here? So I think if you would like a minute to respond to that, that's great.
Yeah, I think several problems. I think as we talked about, we want to avoid a system where you end up with the two people who have the most intense coalition of voters behind them, sometimes by very small margins, being the only two people that have a shot, and then spending a runoff election where they are extremely focused on basically sharpening their swords against each other. I think that is a very unhealthy electoral system compared to one where everyone has an incentive to reach out to each other's voters. You get more voter contact, more turnout, more willingness to take a jump on candidates who may not be considered electable, but then it turns out they are. More positivity, all the things that I stated at the outset. I think those are all extremely beneficial outcomes.
Okay. I was a candidate that was not considered electable then. And
girl,
I won. So it happens.
Still underprepared.
That's right.
At the,
that's right.
At the table.
Let's go to Councilmember Cashman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thanks for the presentation. It's a really interesting topic, and I'm still trying to figure it all out. I think I probably missed this, but how does the if what you're proposing is passed, does that change the at-large voting in any way?
So it would, the at-large voting would change to a system where people could rank up to six, and then the two winners would be produced by that as soon as the software can handle that.
Yeah.
If the software can't handle it by 27, you would continue to rank two, and the two winners would come out for that year.
Do we have anyone from the clerk's office here?
We do.
Yes. Didn't she hide behind
And
there?
Bless them, because the actual math is the whole thing.
So what my question is, has the clerk's office determined a savings of $2 million?
Councilman, sorry.
Please introduce yourself.
Ben, clerk recorder's office. The $2 million number that's been mentioned today is something that came from our office. It's not that exact number, but that is around what we spent on the last runoff election.
Okay. Thank you,
yeah.
Ben. I'm trying to envision if this leads to longer ballots, more pages, so on and so forth.
The ballot design is something that the clerk's office has also been looking at. I don't know if you want to say anything about that, Ben, but because of the format where each name is still on one line, I actually don't know that it would be more pages, but you could speak to that.
Yeah, it's a good question, Councilman. So because what we envision, and I will say too that if this measure passes, there's more work to be done on our side to work with groups like the Center for Civic Design, which is an organization that is there specifically to determine how best voters look at a ballot and what we can do to make sure that voters understand what the ballot looks like, but also be efficient with the space. It's a grid, so you basically have your candidates listed vertically, and then your rankings listed horizontally. That's, I think, generally accepted as the best method. So it doesn't necessarily create extra space this way. Sometimes we do split our ballot page in half, so you have votes on this side and votes on this side. That could be something that we're not able to do depending. So will it increase the size of the ballot? We don't expect it to be a major increase in ballot size.
Good, thank you. Appreciate that, Ben. Let's see here. Yeah, the one thing one of the first things you talked about was it.
Good morning.
Good morning. Nice to see you. It encourages people to hit more doors. I can't imagine needing any encouragement to hit more doors. Honestly, I can't. That one, I don't know if I put much credibility on. Also, was interested in one of the things I believe that Councilwoman Parity, that you forwarded, talked about that it might result in the electability of more moderate candidates. And I don't know whether that's a selling point or a negative. So that just kind of stuck with me, and that's all I've got.
Can I respond to that?
Please.
I would use the word more broadly appealing candidates, which I think is a different thing. Because I think it has to do with whether you can get a large number of people to buy into your particular vision, which could be left, right, or center, right? So I think there's a distinction there. I see the word moderate tossed around. I don't think that means politically middle of the road. I think that means coalition building is how I would see it.
And I agree with that also, Councilmember Cashman. I think our kind of delineation of who's left, right, center, I think most voters are looking at issues, and especially when it comes to nonpartisan yeah. city races. I think it's a different deal. I mean, do you care about dealing with my potholes? And you can also deal with some of the other big things that are facing our city, our budgets, et cetera. And I think folks are willing to appeal for all of those variety of issues and be able to speak to folks that live right next door to them and folks that live across the district or across the city when it comes to at large, I think is essential.
Yeah, and I do, just as a quick comment, I do think should something like, well, even without something like this passing, I think we need more extensive voter education.
Absolutely.
For sure. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, sir.
Great. Thank you. Councilwoman Gonzalez-Gutierrez.
Oh, okay. All right. I'm going to try to keep this as short as possible. Thank you. I just want to thank you both for providing a lot of the sources for the data that you have provided and being able to provide like that research background. It's been very helpful to be able to see where this information is coming from. I do have a couple of questions. Are there examples of how ranked choice works in the multi-winner races, such as with in our situation with that large? I was under the impression in my one-on-one that I just had that it would be operating the same, but it sounds like there's still this issue. And that does like, I don't know, it does seem like if it's going to be implemented, it should be implemented equally across the board, right? If that's the way that it's gonna happen. So do you guys have any examples of other races in other parts of the country where there is a similar type of situation, like as in ours, where there's a multi-winner race and they use RCB?
I will have to go back and look, and I think the difference would be it depends on your like audit standards. We have an extremely stringent audit standard in Colorado. Ben or some of our other folks, if anyone has an answer to that, like if you know of a place that does multi-winner already in the U.S., I would be interested to know that. If not, I can look that up for you. But just to reiterate the kind of the it's just about computing power. So it does work exactly the same, but it's harder to do the math when you have to come out with two winners. So it's literally, you know, you think about like these giant cloud computing facilities or whatever. Linda, I think, has an answer.
Oh, okay.
For us. Thank
so,
you so much.
The proportional multi-winner ranked choice voting has been done in the U.S. Since 1915. So you can even do it without a computer. So I'll say that, and there are cities that do this with our same software. So Portland, a series of cities in California have done this to remedy the Voting Rights Act complaints. So I wanna say Albany is now all proportional because it's a small municipality. So there are places that have at-large seats elected proportionally.
So there are multiple seats that are elected under one. So like two, for in our case, there's two under one
yes.
question.
Multi-winner.
Exactly, it's multi-winner. So the ballot looks the same as single winner. You just rank your choices. The tally follows the same method and finds a second winner.
And it's probably because they're not using this like absolutely highest, best possible most impregnable audit standard is what I'm guessing, the 3%.
No, it's not related to that, but it is, and it's just a matter of working out the math to run the RLAs. So this would be contributing to the generation of the data needed to come up with those numbers.
Exactly.
But the threshold for the single winner is 50%, so it's a simple majority. And then for a two-winner seat, it's one-third. So that's the threshold that gets
okay.
Yep.
Okay. My last question will be more around like the voter education piece, and I appreciate that being built in. However, I would be curious to know in the races that you had indicated that you showed like, hey, this showed, we saw an increase in voter turnout. I would love to see the breakdown of that data. Like, what does that turnout look like? Is it more people of color that are turning out based on some of the things that we've heard today that have been said that, you know, like in Portland, how that happened, what happened there? And then some of the concerns we've heard from our friends from AFSCME is what does that actually then look like? And do we have the data to support that there, the voter turnout overall has increased, but has voter turnout for people of color, has that decreased or has it increased or has it stayed the same? I don't know if you have that information.
Yeah, across the board, when turnout increases, it does it the same for all groups. And that was true in New York in particular. And I've looked at that in like many comparator cities. The Portland election, I just want to address that. There were a lot of really sort of complex reasons why turnout may have fallen in that election. If you look at the whole state of Maine for that particular election, Portland still has had higher turnout than other places and less of a drop than other places. They had like a much larger number of candidates than they usually did. There were a lot of factors to that. So I will circulate an article that talks about that and gets way down in the weeds of it. But I don't think it's any kind of indicator that RCV decreased turnout that was the reason, just as the headline.
Okay, so I'll just make a quick statement is that, you know, I'm still not sure where I stand on this particular policy as it relates to that, but as it relates to it being ready for the next phase of things, I would be comfortable with that because I think you guys have done a tremendous amount of work and have, you know, worked with a lot of partners to get where you're at. And so I just wanted to say that for the record.
And Councilmember Gonzalez-Gutierrez, I want to be clear, the discussion on risk limiting audits, the clerk and recorder's office have provided direction to city council members. If this goes to the floor, we'll have a wider discussion on this. But right now, the clerk's office cannot provide a risk limited audit for these multi winner races. They cannot. They can provide it for single winner races. And the clerk's office has stated they're not concerned at this point. They can continue based on the language within this bill and identify a solution if necessary. But as it stands, as our presentation presents single winner races, the RLA can be done by the Denver clerk's office, the multi-winner races. And if Ben would like to have Ben come up and clarify that again, I know that's a longer debate, but I just wanted to make sure we put a point on that and that we're having those very direct discussions with the clerk's office as well.
Is there anything you want to add or correct, Ben, about audits?
No, I think that's right. I'm Ben Schiller again with the clerk's office. So where we stand today for a ranked choice voting to do a risk limiting audit, we are fully capable of doing a risk limiting audit for a single winner race, so any race except for the at-large as it's written today. With regard to the other bill, yeah, that's just something that will affect the way that we conduct audits now.
Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you, Manager.
Great. Thank you. We have 8 minutes left and three people in queue. If we need to go a little bit over, that's fine, but I do want to be respectful of our lobbyists who have come all the way down here to present to us today. So I'd like to make sure that we get them in. So with that, we'll go to Council President Sandoval.
Thank you. Thank you all for the research. I know that you all have done a great amount of research. And I think one point is there's just conflicting research out there. I think there's research that will show that you don't need ranked choice voting, and there's research that will show that you do need ranked choice voting. I voted no when it came to the state. And as somebody who is helping lead this body, I have never seen a more diverse body since I started with the city in 2012. I've been here a little bit longer than our Councilmember Flynn, Councilmember Cashman, and Councilmember Gilmer, who have served on the body since 2015. We have six Latinas. Never did I think I would serve with six Latinas. I just didn't think I would do that. I was here when there were two. When it was Lopez and Montero. And I'll never forget having to bring forward a proclamation for the Corky Gonzalez Library And it was so contentious on that floor that we had a vote count. I had a vote count to work on a proclamation to bring a library, and it was all it was a library going to the library commission to say that city council supported advancing the name of Corky Gonzalez for a library named a library. And so in a time where redistricting has shown that Denver has gentrified, in a time in my lifetime where I grew up with majority of Latinos and my council district has gentrified, we have a council that actually is reflective of the people of Denver. And so I said I was gonna be a no vote in budget and policy on both proposals being sent to the ballot, and I'm gonna be consistent with that. I'm gonna be a no today. I'm not saying that it's not ready. I just think that we need to have a bigger discussion. Once again, I feel like this process, not that the thoroughness, I wanted the sponsors to hear me, it's not the thoroughness of the information. There hasn't been any big outreach. Once again, no one in my council district knows about either proposals. And when you're wanting to change a big proposal like that, I think we need to have town halls throughout the whole entire city. I took redistricting super serious, and it was in a time where we couldn't even have like in-person meetings. The COVID numbers shot so high, and we still, I did one in Southwest Denver, I did one in Southeast Denver, I did one in far Northeast Denver and Northwest Denver and Central and virtually, because I felt like it was so important for everybody. And that was just something we were voting on. It wasn't even going to the vote of the people. And so when there's these big proposals, I just want to think about the derelict and the properties that they worked on that for years, and there was tons of outreach, there was tons of community support. So I just, when we have these big discussions, I just feel like right now with everything going on, it feels so rushed. And I just, it's hard on me when things are rushed. I'm much more of a planner. I like to plan things diligently out. And I know that a bigger vote in, it'd be really hard to get it on the November election. But there was this proposal when I was chairing redistricting of getting rid of the at-large, and it felt very rushed, and I was a no at that point as well. So you're just gonna see me consistently doing like voting in this manner. And I just wanna say it's not because of the research. There's tons of research out here, and I have talked about ranked choice voting since I've gotten into office. I've met with Rosemary Rodriguez, who was actually appointed by a Republican to serve at the federal level as a Democrat. And so I'll never forget talking to her about that experience of her being appointed by a Republican president to go to Washington as a staunch Democrat. And what people don't really realize that in Denver, you know, I've just been talking to more people about what's gonna be on the ballot. People don't even realize that we're nonpartisan and that we don't have a party to back us. And so when I think about other ranked, even in other municipalities, they run partisan. They're Democrats or Republicans, and they run on a party affiliation. We're very, very unique in Denver. So just want to say thank you to the sponsors. And I just want to say, I know that this elicits a lot of emotions on a lot of different people. I feel like the other proposal, that at large, elicited a lot of emotions. And I just am going to vote right now no for committee, because I just think that there needed to be bigger conversations than what's happening around this table. And I feel like both proposals were just conversations that were happening around this table. So thank you all for the sponsors, and thank you, Madam Chair.
Great. Very quickly, Madam Chair.
No, I'm sorry. We have two more people in the queue, and we have a presentation after this, so we need to move
that,
on.
Thanks. Council Chair.
I also want to welcome Councilmember Lewis. I apologize, Councilmember Lewis. You've been here for like 25 minutes, and I'm able to do that. So
happy to be here.
Sorry.
See you.
Thanks for being here, Councilmember. Council Pro Tem Romero Campbell.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I echo a lot of your words. So thank you, Council President, for recognizing how much data and research has gone behind. I think that this has been one as well that I've been sitting and listening and thinking about it. And it's like, there is a lot of conversation about it around this table. In talking to folks in, you know, in my district, what they're asking is more. I've had a lot of people say, please tell me we're not going to have everything under the sun on our ballot. And it's a real interesting conversation, but they don't even know what's being proposed on the ballot, but they just want less. So we got a lot of feedback about how long the ballot was this last time. One of the questions that I had, I still find it, and I'm trying to get through kind of fully understanding where we're at, is for the at-large. Like, we haven't figured this part out. So to put it forward without having a time that we know that this could be figured out for at-large, I think kind of is a missing piece for me in this proposal, and being able to kind of take something forward that's a finished product. I know that we don't have a lot of time for feedback on it, but just in reading it and thinking about this and the other proposal that's out there, I feel like that's a part that just feels a little unfinished for me, for how we can think about what we're putting up in front and having discussion about.
Thank you,
Madam Chair. Great, thank you. And I will go last and just very quickly say, it sounds like we need a roll call vote. We will need a motion and a second on this, but I think Council Pro Tem Romero Campbell has really hit the nail on the head for me. I, as all of you know, I'm a big believer in letting the people vote on it. I think that that's right. When it is ready to go in front of them. My concern is with the at-large council members. I am thrilled that we have hit that risk-limiting audit piece, and I think that that's really great. I have some real concerns that, you know, for those watching at home, our threshold in committee is this ready to be considered by the full council? And I'm not sure that it is. It's not tweaking a little bit of language to fix the question of what happens with at-large council members. That's not a small issue that can just be, you know, tweaked in a couple of words. That is a real issue that needs to be worked out in this language. And so, truly, I am a supporter of sending this to the ballot. That issue has to be worked out before this gets sent to the ballot. And to me, that this can't leave committee until we have definitive answers and definitive language on what that looks like, because sending this to the ballot with something where we say, well, maybe the technology is going to be there in time for 2027, doesn't feel like responsible governance. So I am going to be a no in committee today, but I know Councilmember Watson, Councilmember Parity, if you have a response to that that you want to say, please take a minute to do that, and then we'll do a roll call vote.
Just one sentence. So I just want to be clear about where it stands. This draft has a trigger clause. So the only thing we don't know is whether we would have the ability to flip to RCV for the at-large races for 2027 or for 2031. And so that is an uncertainty, but that's what we've cabined it to, basically.
Yeah, really appreciate that. Thanks for clarifying that. I guess for me, I appreciate that you have done the best you can in terms of making sure that the language is there to be able to, you know, have that move forward exactly as when the technology is there. I'm just not sure I'm ready without knowing that the technology is there. I'm not sure that this is responsible for us to send to the voters without that technology being there. And so I will also be a no in committee today. And so I need a motion and a second on this.
So moved.
Moved by Councilmember Watson, seconded by Councilmember Lewis.
I'm sorry, it's a motion to postpone or to
approve? No, it's a motion to move forward.
Okay. Councilmembers Gonzalez Gutierrez?
Aye.
Cashman?
Aye.
Lewis?
Aye.
Romero Campbell?
No.
Sandoval?
No.
Watson?
Aye.
Sawyer?
No.
Four ayes.
Great, thank you. So this will move forward to the floor. Thank you very much for this. And with that, we are gonna quickly shift to have our state legislative update. Thank you guys so much for being here. And I apologize that this ran over, but as you can see, it's a really important conversation for us to be having. So I'm gonna have to make it quick, but really appreciate you guys having 20,
Adam, do you need another, do you need someone next
5 minutes?
It's just you.
To talk about what's going on in the city.
A little Denver pit. Target, man. Target, as my mom would have said.
Sorry about that. I saw you there for a while, but there was a roll call.
So I was like, I'm going to put on Target nails in the hotel room.
Oh, okay.
Live in luxury. How are you?
I'm good.
I only have 10 minutes. I'm so sorry.
No, we'll get through. Madam Chair, what's our time frame?
We have 25 minutes.
25 minutes? Okay, do you want me to jump to yours first?
Yeah, I mean, I've
all right, we've got 25 minutes for this, so thank you all for your forbearance. I apologize that you are going to have to rush through this a little bit, but why don't you go ahead and introduce yourself and get started.
All right, thank you, Madam Chair. Adam Paul with the Mayor's Office. And part of the Mayor's Office legislative team.
Molly, do you wanna? I'm Molly Steinemann. I'm with BBMK, one of the lobbyists for the City and County of Denver.
Katie Hancock with Policy Matters, one of the lobbyists.
Yes. Dominic Moreno.
All right. Well, so we'll get moving. We're going to jump a little bit out of whack. We're going to do the special session preview before Molly has to leave. But what we have today is an overview of the session, bills kind of by category, implementation and potential actions that will need to take place by the city, a little bit of a budget preview, and then, as I said, special session. So in general, you have our two lobby teams, and the city's council legislative committee consists of councilors Gonzalez Gutierrez and Hines, as well as Dominic Moreno and myself and our two lobby teams. As you can see, it was an active session with 657 bills introduced. 171 of those were killed and 585 went to the gov's desk for signature. Internally, the city reviewed 291 bills that were deemed to have some sort of operational impact or were based upon our combined legislative goals or priorities. We took positions on 78 and then jumped into the supported 34, opposed 3, and then with the rest would be amend or monitor positions. So with that, I'm going to just jump all the way down to the potential special session. There you go.
The next to last slide. Thank you, everyone, for your leeway there. Like I said, I'm Molly Steinemann. I'm at BBMK. I think that the talk of the town right now is the special session. And depending on who you're talking to and which day of the week you're talking to them, that sort of target seems to be moving all over the place. I can say with reasonable assurances that I think that we would probably go to a special session based on the conversations that I'm having with folks. Although, to be fair, I did just have a conversation with the Speaker pro tem yesterday, and he gave it a 60-40 shot that we were not going to go. So, again, it's a bit of a moving target. I've heard everything just from later this fall to about mid-August. The date that keeps bubbling to the surface for me is August 18th. I'd welcome Policy Matters intel on this one as well, because it does seem to be just such a moving target. I think that for the most part, if a special session were to be called, it would be largely in response to some of the federal activity that we have seen. So Medicaid, SNAP, food assistance, those types of things will probably be the highest priority for most both chambers. AI legislation to continue to hack away at that ongoing policy is a discussion as well, because there was, and Mayor Johnson signed onto it as well, there was a joint statement from the governor, the attorney general, some of our federal delegation that did request the legislature taking another look at the AI policy in the next round of policy consideration. I think by and large, anything that has a tax credit is likely on the chopping block. Tax credits do cut both ways, because even if you eliminate a tax credit, you just bump up against the Tabor cap, and it's not like it necessarily earns the state additional revenue. But I think that some folks are trying to hack away at some of these tax credits that are sort of COVID era business relief measures to see if we can kind of fix the budget in a sustainable way long term. Would welcome any thoughts from my Policy Matter colleagues, but I think that's kind of what we're seeing as far as special session.
the last piece, and Tanya Kelly Bowery, Policy Matters team, apologies for coming back in a little bit late. The last piece, I think, is the Medicaid piece and how the Medicaid expansion, as well as dollars and SNAP, which is critical to the city and county. We're hearing that that certainly will be in the call in terms of food assistance and how we're going to pay for some of the big, beautiful bill implications for the state of Colorado. Yes. So I think those are the key things. AI, I think there's dynamics with Majority Leader Rodriguez wanting to not necessarily do as much on AI yet. And so we're seeing how that plays out. But the scope of the session could be broad, both on the federal ramifications. With regard to the tax credits, there are two, the EITC and the family tax credit. That has now, the cost of those have increased so much that it could be looking at the homestead exemption bumping into the general fund to the tune of about $200 million. In the past, that was paid for this with the Tabor surplus. So for sure, I think Molly's point about figuring out all those tax credits and how they interact on the budget side of things is critical. One of the other really interesting dynamics on the Joint Budget Committee, you've got three out of the six Joint Budget Committee members potentially looking at running for statewide office. Shannon Bird has already announced to run for Congressional District 8. Jeff Bridges has announced that he's running for treasurer. And then there's rumors going around that Barb Kirkmeyer will potentially run for governor. And so that's a unique dynamic for the Joint Budget Committee as we move into the special session as well. And then just a reminder that for Governor Polis, this is his last session. And so there's a whole bunch of folks in the spectrum looking at running for governor.
Madam Chair, do you want to take any questions on the special session?
Yeah, I think we should start there. Before we do, I want to see if council members Hines or Gonzalez Gutierrez have anything to add since there are council representatives for state ledge.
On the special session or?
On it.
Oh, all right.
Yeah, on the special. Let's stick with the special session and then we'll.
I don't have anything to add. These guys have it covered.
Okay. We don't have anyone in the queue on special session. So I'm going to give you 7 minutes to get through the rest of your slide.
Quickly, and I think we did want to, one of the really important things for our council members, we did prepare something that has impacts that the county would have to face through the legislation that passed. And so we'll get that comprehensive report out just because we've got an abbreviated timeline for you to look at it. And we're happy to answer questions from all of you. I do really want to recognize we interacted with all of you throughout the session. Really want to recognize Adam and Dom and their team, as well as Zara, Emmy, and Councilwoman Gigi's team. Chris and Serena were, I'm sorry, Councilman Hines and Councilwoman Gonzalez Gutierrez were very involved in a lot of the work we did, as well as the mayor and the mayor's office. And it was a pretty challenging session, but I was really pleased that we got off to really being able to make impacts. We had our Denver Day at the Capitol, which was the first of hopefully many. We were really pleased at the interaction from DIA and just the interaction from the Denver delegation this year. It felt like we had a much more seamless process. So just recognizing all of our teams and thank you.
Okay, we're gonna do lightning round. We'll start with housing.
All right, so these were all the bills that we took positions on in terms of housing. Some of the ones we wanted to highlight were SB 20, tenant and landlord law enforcement. It makes changes regarding the enforcement of tenant and landlord laws, specifically with local government. It allows counties and municipalities to independently initiate enforcement actions to regulate tenant and landlord laws, and that local power begins January 1st, 2026. YGBI, it, you know, failed on the floor ultimately, but we will possibly see some version of it come back since it was a governor's office priority this last session. And then 1004, no pricing coordination between landlords. This passed the legislature. The city and county of Denver did send a letter of support in, along with some other counties to the governor, but he ultimately decided to veto it.
Okay. Move to labor.
Labor, House Bill 1001, wage and hour enforcement. It modifies wage and hour laws and how these are enforced. And for local governments, it does clarify that they are not restricted from enforcing laws or ordinances related to wage payments, and that you may enact laws related to wage payments provided they do not reduce employee protections or benefits established in state law.
And this was a big one we worked on with our own member, Rep. Mabry, who was very happy with our support and asked us to thank the council in the mayor's office.
Child welfare, we wanted to highlight House Bill 1097, the placement transition plans for children. It requires county caseworkers to develop transition plans for children anytime a decision has been made by the county or the courts to move a child to a new placement. Equity, we wanted to highlight House Bill 1154, the Communication Services for People with Disabilities Enterprise. It creates the enterprise and the Department of Human Services to provide services and resources for individuals who are blind, print disabled, deaf, hard of hearing, or deaf blind. And it consolidates existing programs under this enterprise and creates a funding source for it. And then for governance, we wanted to highlight the construction defects bill that we spent a lot of time talking about this last session. And so it creates the multifamily construction incentive program to encourage the development of attached housing with two or more units, and for local governments to qualify for funding from the State Affordable Housing Fund, local governments must set up a fast track approval process for for sale multifamily condominium projects.
Awesome. So maybe I'm pinch hitting for one of my colleagues here. The efforts to support food waste, that was one of the ones that the city and county took a support position on. It was one of the ones that we saw a lot of engagement from the business community working with local governments to essentially work that down a little bit to make it so that there was a slate of options for businesses rather than having too many mandates. And it was kind of a good example of a compromise between some of the public sector and the private sector. And then I think we wanted to talk about the backflow one on this one. Forgive me. I am again pinch hitting here.
And what I would say too is we'll send this presentation because of time. And if you want to just go through it and send us any questions or clarifying things, we're happy to provide that to you.
The backflow ones, this is another one that was heard through the interim committee. This was one of the ones, I know that Denver had some concerns with this one. It was originally heard in a Dora sunset. Unfortunately, the way that sunset was amended last session, it would have eliminated some of the backflow inspectors, which would have made a tremendous backlog in some of these public safety options. And so that was one of the priority bills that we saw from the public health perspective brought up this year to make it so that we were ensuring that those inspectors and those the pipeline of services was available to local governments. And then there was a slate of some of our law enforcement ones here. I know that Denver did take some support positions on a lot of those firearm bills that obviously did move its way through the process, and the legislature does continue to show the political will to move forward with gun regulations overall. And then that first one out there, the Colorado vending of the digital vending one, that was an interesting one because it did lend some support to the senior communities. We did see some, unfortunately, some extortion through seniors and some other vulnerable populations with NFTs and Bitcoin specifically. And so they made sure that there was some legal protections built out to protect our vulnerable users of some of those online merchant options.
Okay, and so this comes back to some sort of city action on these bills, and I know there's some other ones ancillary to like 2023 and 2024 session. These are the 2025 that'll just take either some tweaks or some more adoption. I referenced the residential building stair modernization and then the regional codes for factory-built structures. So you'll probably hear more about these as they start to work their way through the city processes.
And then we wanted to just really quickly highlight what's happening with the budget, which is key. Before the federal legislation that passed, we were about $690 million, $8 million shortfall in the budget. As you recall, last session, they worked on a number of sort of one-time cash fund transfers, but they were not base building cuts. This year, compounded with the base building cuts, we're also looking at, because of the federal legislation that passed, about $250 million revenue loss from the tax deduction on overtime just in the current year. They passed a bill for the out years. The cuts to SNAP from the federal bill are shifting from what's happening with what they pay for to counties, local municipalities, as well as the state having to cover those costs. So that's going to be a huge impact, and certainly something, as we just referenced, will come up in the special session. It's going to cost an additional $50 million in administration and about $140 million in programming just for SNAP. That's on top of the $638 we're already in the hole. Of course, any of the slashes on Medicaid, they capped how much we can get currently with the provider rate federal matching funds. It was at 6%. That's coming down to 3%. It's massive amounts of money that the state's going to be on the hook for, between $300 to $800 million in Medicaid expenses with which they're really looking at. And then the last piece is, the provider tax. That's the ratchet down that I just talked, which is that it's actually, this last piece is $10 billion over 10 years that is going to have an impact because of the changes that they've done at the federal level. So these are all big issues that we're having to deal with. The June forecast just occurred at the legislature, which was already showing signs of our economy slowing down. Our next forecast is going to be on September 20th, which will be after the special session. In terms of the call and what the governor is thinking about, they've been looking at potentially waiting to see when the federal government closes down in October, what that final amount will be. And so that may be on the call, it may not be, but certainly those are things that we're gonna be watching very closely for the city and county on budget. Questions? I know we did a speed round, sorry, you guys.
You guys did awesome. We've got 11 minutes for questions and only so far one council member in the queue, two council members in the queue, three council members in the queue. Everybody's going to get two questions.
Perfect.
Before we get started, Council Member Hines, Council Member Gonzalez Gutierrez, do you have any comments on everything we just talked about?
So just obviously quickly, the governor vetoed 11 bills, is that right?
Yeah.
So more than ever. Yeah, more than ever. So a couple members have asked me, and I apologize that I did not ask you before this, so feel free to respond later. But how early before CBDA must a bill get passed for the governor to have to veto and give the legislature an opportunity to override?
So the 10-day clock is the key number in terms of that happening. But so many bills went down to the end of the wire. Once the 30-day clocks, the governor has starts, which is after CNADA, the governor has complete discretion on whether he signs, vetoes, or lets a bill become law by itself. And so a lot of people, that's why this year, this was the latest that we have ever seen in the history of the budget passing. The budget did not pass until almost the end, and they were going like crazy to make sure that they got that through before that 10-day clock. So it will be interesting. But this year, the governor did veto more bills than he's ever vetoed during his whole tenure of working as governor.
So 120 days of session, a bill has to be passed by day 110 for them to get an opportunity to potentially override a veto.
Correct.
Thank you.
Great. Thank you. Councilwoman Gonzalez Gutierrez?
No, I'll just say, I just want to thank everyone, all the council members, for all of your participation. I know it was a lot. It's always a lot. But I think that we're really having a larger impact now. Like I mentioned before, I was a Denver legislator, so I didn't see this type of interaction as much with council, like maybe individually, every once in a while, on certain particular issues. And so it has been great to be able to give, to let Denver legislators know what their Denver City Council members and the mayor, like what is our position on particular issues? What is the city's position? That wasn't always, it was there, like it would be provided to us, but it wasn't, there wasn't a lot of force behind it. And so it's been great to be able to do that and make those kind of efforts. So I appreciate the team and everybody being part of that work.
And I really want to recognize and thank Councilwoman Sawyer for having us come to you much more regularly. We've never briefed you all this much during and throughout the session so that we could get immediate input from you all. So thank you to all of the members for letting us come to FinDev on a regular basis.
Thanks.
Yeah, I'm glad it worked out. Thank you guys for all of your hard work. All right, we have a couple council member questions. We'll go to council member Parity.
Is it possible to go back to that Medicaid slide? That's not how I feel about Medicaid.
That is such a great range.
I'm sorry, I didn't say that clearly to Tim. Tim, if you're able to get back to the Medicaid slide.
Shut it all down.
And I do really,
no worries.
I want to mention Victoria, Tim, and Anshul by name. I did mention Sarah and Emmy, but they were incredible and incredibly helpful with getting us the agency feedback and updates so we could learn more.
We don't, guys, this is okay.
While they're doing that, can I just say one quick thing? Melissa Mata was
shout out
instrumental
to Melissa.
Helping us and supporting us. Sorry, I just should have said that.
No, that's great. Thank you.
The slide is not a huge big deal. I just wanted to ask if there's any more. I just like visual aids, but we're so staggered by this Medicaid change. I've heard the numbers of people that are, you know, going to lose coverage or be subject to these really difficult work requirements are just really staggering. And so I was curious if you all have a sense of, like, in addition to just the straight up money issue, what's happening within HCPF and at the state level about trying to help people meet those new work requirements where possible, because I think the city probably has a decent sized role to play in that, given that a lot of people who are going to lose coverage are probably in, you know, city shelters in some cases. It's going to impact people coming out of the jail, et cetera. So that's just something I think is really relevant for us, I would say.
Councilwoman Parody, I think that is such an astute question. Because of those new work requirements, they are actually going to have to build a system from scratch. That's not that dollar amount is not even included in any of the impacts to the dollars and figures that we just mentioned today in our presentation. We're also very concerned that a lot of people who are on Medicaid are actually really sick. So if they are required to work, in what field are they going to be required to work? I think there's a lot of, there are many groups that are really working with HCPF right now to say, are we looking at this? These are big things that we've got to think through. But all of that is going to need to be constructed, which is slow. There was a lot of feedback and criticism of HCPF in the governor's office before because of what happened with Medicaid and disenrollment. There were a lot of people that were eligible for Medicaid that were not re-enrolled, that should have been re-enrolled, and the legislature really dealt with that in a number of public hearings. Joint Budget Committee questioned, interrogated very hard questions to the director, Kim Bim, on HCPF and what they were doing to sort of solve some of those issues. And the counties were really put in a terrible situation. Our Denver Human Services Department trying to enroll people, they said, can we put stuff on a different colored paper when the mail goes out so people know to look at this? So there's still a lot of issues that have not been dealt with that we've got to continue to push on the policy side of this.
And I think
and we've got we've got 5 minutes and three more people in the queue. So okay. Are you sure?
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you. Council President Sandoval.
Thank you. Thank you all for the work. Thank you, Councilman Gonzalez-Gutierrez and Hines and the team and Adam and Paul. This is, did I say that? Did I say Adam Paul?
I said Adam and Paul.
I meant
Dominic. Paul and Dominic.
Happens when you have first, like, a name with first two last the name. Sorry,
two first
names. Adam and Dominic. Paul. Sorry about that. I was like, that. Did I end with Paul? That's my dad's name. Sorry, I went down rabbit hole. So sorry. So thank you all for your work. It's really big. I just want to say thank you, and then I'm going to put an and. I just want the table to know I am not supportive of this $50 million bridge coming forward through with the governor's office. It's a tier three encroachment that city council would have to approve. Yeah. And when you have a slide that says that we have such a huge budget shortfall and a special session, I just wanted it to be very clear to everyone around the table where I stand on said proposed bridge. I will not be supporting it. I will be of no vote if it makes it ever to the tier three encroachment. When I talked with the governor, he kept saying that it wasn't tax dollars, that it wasn't Denver's tax dollars. And I was like, but it's still my tax dollars because I pay taxes at the state level. And so there are tax dollars, there are state tax dollars that would be going into said proposed bridge. So I just wanted to make that very clear on the record where everybody, where I stood as council president and as this is moving forward, tier three encroachments are something that are clearly under our purview. Mm-hmm. So just that's my last thought. $50 million, I think there's part funder that can go back to fill this deficit. So thank you, thank Madam Chair.
President Sandoval, we'll pass that along. The Joint Budget Committee has also expressed concerns on the record during the September revenue forecast time period. They did take it off the Capital Construction Committee. It was on there as an agenda item and they pulled that.
Yeah, thank you.
Great. Council Pro Tem Romero Campbell. I'm staring at Anshul because that is a vote that we would have to take. And so I appreciate your sentiments, and it's not a quasi-judicial vote, so that is fine. But I I do want to just be very careful that that has not come to us.
Yes.
Do you want to get up and say this? Okay.
It's not quite, we just need to be very careful. It's a certain beyond encroachment.
Yes, it's a tier three encroachment. I mean, we have another one coming that I've already said I'm going to want. So this is not quasi-judicial, but I do just want to.
And I'm on the record in a post meeting. I'm not breaking any rules.
Yep, for sure. But I do just want to say, as you take that back to the governor's office, remember that there's a separation between single council members and council as a body.
President Sandoval said, I will be a no. And I'm making it clear.
Down, President Sandoval.
No, that's great. Anshul's got 2 days left, and he's like, oh my gosh. All right, Council Pro Tem Romero Campbell.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you for the work of the entire team and to my council colleagues for all the work that you've done this last legislative session. I do, and I believe you're going to be chairing kind of as these processes will be coming through. It would be great to be able to for committee. Who's chairing the committee? You're chairing committee.
State committee will
state
be
committee. Yes,
me
sorry.
Going forward once a month.
What would be great, or what would be helpful, is as this federal legislation is coming through, is getting regular updates. Knowing that you guys are kind of keeping your eye on it, we are as well, but having that communication of how that impacts what's going on with our budget, because there are a lot of things I think all of us are trying to keep our eye on. So any additional like memos or feedback and updates would be incredibly helpful.
That's fantastic. Can I just check, are you receiving them currently? And they're not every week, but as we have relevant information, I'm trying to make sure that that's forwarded on to you, and we'll make sure we continue to do that as we internally review, then have our federal team also looking on that side.
Yeah.
Okay.
I appreciate that, because I think that these aren't silo conversations. These aren't silo budgets. There's been an incredible amount of, you know, budget reduction that has happened in support services around education, and that's what supports working families. So when I think about kind of this, just as the dominoes, it feels like fall for the supports that we have for families and children. It's pretty immense. So I just appreciate the updates, and more frequently and as they come would be fantastic.
And as you have information or letters or things like that, please feel free to share. We'll pass that on to our federal folks also and make sure that that's happening. Or if you have questions or specific information you need, always feel free to reach out, and we'll make sure we get it for you.
Fantastic. Thank you.
Fantastic. Yep. So we're at time. I will just say there are two issues that I still don't understand the implications for the city that are state laws, right? And that's elections and food trucks. So those were going to be my two questions. I think so we can potentially, I'm going to ask you guys to come back and talk through some of the like final implications of things that passed this time or were not vetoed. For those watching at home, we're going to have some new committees. This is my last time chairing FinGov. I have been the chair of this committee for 3 years. It has been my absolute honor to do it, and I just want to say thank you to our production team and to all of our staff who put this all together for us, and to you guys. Really appreciate this. Looking forward to continuing to work with you. It'll be like a once a month cadence, and so we will connect and talk more about that soon. We have three items on consent that haven't been called off, and with that, we are adjourned. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you
very much.